Hello and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We are the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And in today's episode, we're doing season 7, episode 19, The Lies Ill Concealed.
Yes.
We're back after 3 weeks. Now, the reason that we've been off so long was the first week was because of birthday celebrations.
Illness.
The second week was illness. Oh, no.
No, the first week was illness.
That's right, yeah. So we had illness and then birthday celebrations and then just work was so busy that there would be no point in recording because I would not be able to commit to doing this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, February is always a difficult time. So if you've been with us from the very beginning, you'll always have noticed quite consistently that February, there does seem to be a bit of a drop.
Yeah.
We've been a bit sporadic with the episodes lately, but we're back.
I just thought it'd be one or two weekends, but it was free.
But there will be another break coming up, just saying, because we are about to move house. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So there will be another little break coming up whilst we move and get everything settled, and then we can get back to it, so.
But the recording quality should be better from then on. It'll all be worth it.
It will all be worth it, absolutely.
So in today's episode, I'm going to lead. And Joel's going to give the trivia. Do you have anything to start us off with?
I'm leading. Yeah, sure. So this episode aired on April 24th, 2011. And it was directed by Larry Shaw and written by David Schladweiler.
Mm-hmm. He's becoming another regular.
He is, yeah. So the title of this episode comes from the lyrics of the song Could I Leave You, taken from the Stephen Sondheim musical Follies. It's revealed that Karen and Martha Huber were good friends before her death in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I guess, implied because they were kind of two old biddies on the same lane. And usually they do kind of join together, but
yeah.
I don't think it was formally confirmed.
Definitely not a confirmation. Maybe just an illicit implication.
Yeah. Ida Greenberg is mentioned in a flashback, and this is the first time that she's been mentioned in the series since season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Gabrielle only just finds out that Bree had an affair with Carl Meyer in this episode.
Yeah, I'm going to save my notes about that until we get there, actually. Never mind.
Yeah. And this episode opens up discussions regarding continuity issues around Susan's cooking abilities. Because ever since the show has started, we've all known Susan to be a terrible cook. It was the main plot point around Susan meeting Mike in episode 1 of the show. And now all of a sudden? Oh, God, I went northern for a second. All of a sudden.
Not out of character.
All of a sudden, Susan can now make soups to give to Paul.
I mean, it's only a soup, but I mean, they still did show a horrifying lack of knowledge of basic vegetables.
Yeah.
So it's still somewhat in character.
True. Despite airing on Easter Sunday, the ratings were actually up from last week with a 3.1 rating in the key demographic and 10.15 million viewers, making it the night's number one scripted TV show. The episode received mixed to positive reviews from critics and universal acclaim from fans of the show.
Okay.
Even though, since going on to Reddit, I have seen quite a few fans that have a bit of a problem with this episode.
Oh, this episode in particular?
Yeah, because of the storyline of the storyline of Gabby and Bree, and how it's almost like an affair, and it's kind of like this whole... I don't think many people find it to be very interesting or funny. I personally find it hilarious.
Yeah, I don't mind it, but I did have a feeling that in the modern day, some people wouldn't like the nod to a gay affair that isn't really a gay affair, you know, because of all the queer baiting that's happened in the last many years.
Yeah. So this week, which was 18th to the 24th of April 2011, three kindergartners are wounded after a gun goes off in a school cafeteria in the US state of Texas. The gun was brought to the school by a 6-year-old child.
By a child? Oh yes. My God.
Probably just picked up their parents' gun or something they found around the house, and it was show and tell and they thought it'd be cool.
I think I remember that story.
So President Goodluck Jonathan of Nigeria wins the presidential election held on the 16th of April, and I just had to put that in there because his name is Goodluck.
I think any joke that we could make, you guys are already thinking.
You're already thinking
right now.
Yeah. Amid a protest against the construction of a new Tesco superstore in the Stokes Croft area of the English city of Bristol, 9 people are arrested and 8 police officers are injured.
Wow, what happened?
I don't know. Good Friday celebrations occur internationally, and Anne Robinson leaves The Weakest Link, prompting the BBC to end the quiz show. Shaka Khan.
What a time to be alive. No more.
More Anne Robinson.
Oh my gosh. The sassiest lady, right? On BBC.
Such an icon of British quiz show culture that she was even referenced in Doctor Who as the Anne bot, or the Android.
The Android. Yeah.
So the number one song in the US this week was S&M by Rihanna featuring Britney Spears. And the number one song in the UK is Party Rock Anthem by LMFAO, Lauren Bennett and Goon Rock.
Oh, that's still
which
happening.
Which I think was still, yeah.
Little tie into our last episode.
Yeah. So number one film in the US was Rio, which is the animated film about a bird.
Okay.
And the number one film in the UK was Fast Five, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, was Fast and Furious Five.
Yeah, they have weird titles.
Yeah. And so that is all of my trivia.
Okay, fab. So let's get started on this episode. Before we do, though, previously, Felicia returned to Wisteria Lane to enact her plan on for revenge on Paul. Tom began spending less time at home because of his new job. Bree was exiled from being friends with Gabby and Carlos. Susan was given a new kidney. And I don't know why I ended that with an upward inflection, because that was the last thing I had.
Just to say, this, I think, is probably one of Bee's all-time favourite episodes, just because of the Gabby and Bree storyline.
Because of the cake scene.
Literally been waiting for this cake scene since we started doing this.
I don't know what to say. It's very memorable. But we're going to start with Susan, and we're going to get that out of the way because it's my least favourite story.
It's just kind of there.
It's a lovely story, it but when you're nice. Surrounded by very funny stories.
When you've got Lynette's story and Brie and Gabby's, this one's just a bit on the lower rung, isn't it?
I love Lynette's story.
Lynette's story is so good.
So we begin the episode with Susan being instructed by her daughter that she isn't allowed sex for six... What?
By her daughter?
Doctor! Oh my god!
Julie is putting her foot down...
Autocorrect. We begin the episode with Susan being instructed by her doctor that she isn't allowed sex for 6 weeks, which leads to Susan dreaming about it. But sadly for her, she isn't dreaming about Mike. She's dreaming about Paul.
Paul.
Which kind of freaks her out.
And he's not an unattractive man.
No, he's not.
But when you share a bed with Mike.
Yeah, true. Mike checks if she's okay. Apparently she's an audible sleeper, and she tells him that she had a sex dream, and Mike asks what they were doing, but Susan lies and tells him that they were doing some really kinky stuff. They go back to sleep with Mike looking forward to having sex with Susan again, and Susan freaked out by her dreams.
I love it when shows like this use the word kinky. Like, yeah. I don't think Susan and Mike have any idea what that even means. Mike clearly thinks kinky is anal. Because even in this scene, Mike's like, oh, is it that thing? And Susan's like, no, let it go.
Yeah, like, this is my dream, not yours.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I hate to break it to you, but anal is far from kinky.
I think her trying to do him, or him trying to do her on top of the kitchen counter, is probably as far as they're going to go.
Yeah.
So Susan goes to Karen's to ask her to babysit MJ on her and Mike's sex night in the future, and feels uncomfortable that Karen already seems to know about it. But apparently she figured it out because Mike was staring at her cleavage, so... She's an insightful woman, what can we say?
Yeah.
She then tells Susan that her old house is a mess and that she should talk to Paul about it, as if he's hanging from the shower, she lives downwind or something.
Yeah.
So she goes over to check on Paul, only for him to answer the door in pretty much just a robe and some underwear.
Yeah, and close it. If you're going to answer the door, Paul, close your robe.
Yeah. So Susan is concerned with his appearance and his demeanour, but Paul says that he's fit as a fiddle.
And she goes to him and says... You look thin. Are you eating? And no, he doesn't look thin. And I'm not saying that in a he looks fat kind of way. I just mean it in a he doesn't look any different.
Right.
Like, he looks no different except he's not shaved and it kind of doesn't look like he's showered for maybe a few days. Yeah, and that's literally it.
He's a bit uncouth.
Yeah. But like, just he could do with a shower and a shave, but he doesn't look thin.
So Susan is telling Mike about her chat with Paul, and Mike is confused as to why she cares so much, considering that he was such a jerk about the kidney situation. He says he doesn't trust the guy and asks Susan to stay away from him, which she agrees to before taking a shower. She then sees a shadow while showering, and Paul opens the curtain and steps into the shower with her, with Susan's permission, and starts kissing her neck. She then wakes up from another sex dream in a panic. So I guess we can assume that maybe she did go to shower, and then later on she went to sleep, and she's having a dream about the shower.
Yeah, and this one she was definitely naked and wet.
Yep.
So all you Terry Hatcher lovers out there, you're getting it in this episode.
Yeah.
You're getting the orgasms, and you're getting the naked, wet Terry. Like, ooh.
I can only assume there wasn't so much of this on Lois and Clark.
No, probably not. But yeah, like, I can imagine that Susan is feeling conflicted, because Paul is Paul. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously very problematic, and he's proved to be quite difficult, but she is carrying his ex-wife's kidney, so she obviously feels a bit of a connection to the man now, despite the fact that Susan seems to be laboring under the impression that Paul gave her the kidney when it wasn't Paul, it was Beth. But
there's also some very old-fashioned kind of Christian conservative values of the whole mind cheating thing. Like, I think she feels really bad that she's having sex dreams about anyone that isn't Mike at all. She's like, oh my god, am I cheating? What is this?
I'm sorry, but when you're in a long-term committed relationship, there is surely there's surely some sort of understanding between you and your partner that if you're gonna have sex dreams, you can't control who you have a sex dream about. You can't control your dreams.
Regular thoughts. I think most people these days have given into the idea that you're probably gonna think about having sex with other people once in a while. Just not gonna follow through with it or cheat emotionally.
No,
but you know, you can't control how you think about people.
No, and if you see someone, you know, you're like, oh damn, like they're hot, yeah, that's fine, shit happens, like whatever. But yeah, sex dreams. I had a sex dream and not me having sex, it was B having sex with Adele. He cheated on me with Adele.
I think we've done that story before.
We have done that story. And I don't hold it against B.
At Susan's next doctor's appointment, she asks if she has any questions, and Susan asks if it's normal to have sex dreams about your kidney donor's husband. So after asking for some advice, because apparently all healthcare professionals surely have some psychological knowledge,
right,
the doctor tells Susan that she needs to follow her impulses, which is to help Paul against Mike's wishes, saying that her dreams probably won't stop until she does, which I guess is kind of sound advice, although I don't really understand why Susan is like, you're a doctor, surely you must have at least read one book or had one course about psychology.
Yeah, I know, she's like, oh, but you went to med school, like, surely you did something about dreams. No.
Yeah, she's more of a doctor of the body, the physical, the body.
Like, I'm a physical doctor. I'm not here. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. And I'm not like a, I don't know, one of those people in the tents that read your palm or whatever.
A fortune teller.
Yes, that's the one. Thank you.
Although I did love when she asked and the doctor was like, I honestly didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Right. Well, she was just, it's such a weird question. I don't know a single person that would legitimately go up to their doctor and ask this question, because most people would just go, oh, I'm a sex dream.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Susan would do that, though.
Because she's also not able to have sex with her husband right now, so that's pent-up horniness.
So, Susan goes around Paul's house as he hasn't been answering his phone, but he tries to just shut her out again. She says that he needs help because he's a mess, and then tells Paul that she's been having dreams about him. Not sure why she had to tell him that, though, but it's out there.
And it makes things go weird, because then in the scene, she's like talking to him about various different things, which you'll get to when you talk about it. But then Paul just keeps saying, is that what we were doing in the dream? Which it just feels so unnatural for someone to say. Even if someone says to me, oh, I had a dream about you, and then doesn't really progress it any further, every time they do something, I'm not going to look at them and say, is that what we were doing in your dream?
No, I'd be like, well, what happened in the dream? And if they didn't tell me, I'd be like, then why did you bring it up?
Yeah, like, why did you bring it up? But instead, he's just like, oh, making soup. Is that what we were doing in your dream? No, what the heck? Shut up. It's so unnatural.
I was like, oh, sure, Paul, it was soup.
No offense, but in my opinion, this script has some writing issues.
Well, it is the worst story of the bunch in the episode. So before saying that, as a landlord, she pretty much does have the right to come in, but she'd rather he invited her in, which is also for any renters. Yeah, if you're renting and your landlord says they have a right to come in and they've just shown up, no, they don't.
Yeah,
they have to give you notice.
Well, in the UK.
Oh yeah, that's true. Sorry if you're anywhere else, I don't know. So she comes in and finds food all over the kitchen and offers to help him make the soup that he was going to make, which is a terrible idea because she's a terrible cook and she didn't even know what a leek was.
No, she didn't. She was like, this green, hairy thing. That's a vegetable, right?
I was like, it's a leek.
And Paul says, oh yes, it's a leek. I was trying to make potato leek soup. Language is weird because in America, they call it potato leek soup. Uh-huh. In the UK, we call it leek and potato.
Mm.
But it's the same soup. It's the same soup. It's the same words. But just it's just so weird. I was watching it and I was like, language is weird.
I think leek and potato sounds better. Not because we're in the UK, but because we often say the shorter word before the longer word.
Yeah.
Because it flows better.
But... I just think it flows. Like, potato leek soup does have a flow to it. Don't get me wrong. Because the and does break it up with ours. But leek and potato, I just think sounds more civilized. No, I'm kidding.
Well, potato is a great word anyway.
Potato is a great word.
They're both sitting down and eating this soup, and apparently it's the only thing that she can ever make well, so.
Yeah, I know. Seven seasons into the show, and a very well-established characteristic that Susan can't cook for shit, yet here she is, making a soup.
I'm not even going to read this, because I actually remember what happens in this bit, but she basically just says, like, when was the last time we had a meal together? It must have been when Mary Alice was alive, and I thought that it was a nice moment.
It was a really nice moment, actually. And then she tries to kind of remind Paul and the audience of the real person that he was before season one.
Yeah.
Which Paul obviously now believes he's no longer that person after all of the experiences that he's gone through. Jail can change a person.
But to be honest, thinking back to season one, this moment feels a bit unearned. Because I was watching it and she said that he was such a nice guy and she taught the daughter to swim. He taught her daughter to swim. And I thought, if we had seen Paul in any way being a nice guy from the start at all, this would feel like such a turn for his character. And then this moment would really make me care. Which it kind of does, but not in the way that I'd really like.
Well, that's the thing. We've seen the evil side of Paul quite consistently from the very, very beginning of the show. However, we know that Paul is the nicer of the two out of Mary Alice and Paul. I don't want to sound horrible. Mary Alice is the narrator and she is a housewife. But out of the two of them, Mary Alice was the one that started off the chain of events. And Paul was not the... Like, Paul didn't want that. He wasn't interested in that. He just followed along with his wife.
I'll be honest, I didn't warm to Mary Alice from the start because one of her first lines was, Edie Britt was a slut. And I was like, you know what, lady?
That's true. That is
true.
You
can chill out.
Judgy bitch. It's so easy for you to talk from your cloud.
But yeah, it feels like the show is trying to gaslight me. I feel like season one is kind of like he's a Disney villain. Not quite extreme, but you know. And then this is like the Disney remake prequel thing.
And season one is a Disney villain. He literally strangles a woman to death in the woods.
Well, yeah. So... She says they should do it more and asks why she cares so much. They then see Mike storming over, so she excuses herself to talk to him. And they do talk. Mike is extremely pissed off and she's talking to Paul despite promising not to. Did she promise not to?
She didn't promise not to, no.
Oh, okay.
She absolutely did not.
I think in his mind he thinks that's how it went then.
Yeah.
She says it's because everyone has turned their back on him and she refuses to leave, saying that she's not leaving Paul until she knows that Paul is okay. Sadly, Mike doesn't see her side, and so he ends up just sort of going inside. He doesn't walk off.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, I do feel like both sides are somewhat valid. Susan is an empathetic person, and she cares about the well-being of this guy because of their past, as well as the whole kidney thing. I get that. But I also do see Mike's side of it, considering that he's done a lot of really terrible things, and he was semi-responsible for a riot, and he did murder someone.
Yeah, but Susan has a very valid point in this scene where she just yells at him that she's not a child, and she knows what she's doing,
and she knows
who he is. And I'm like, yeah, do you know what, Susan? Stand up for your damn self, because if anything, Mike's just being such a man in this scene. He's like, I don't want you talking to him, so you're not going to talk to him. It's very mirroring Carlos and Gabby
now. We do love a good parallel mirroring kind of moment, don't
we? But Mike says in this scene to Susan that she doesn't know Paul like he does, but actually, I think it's the other way around. I don't think Mike knows Paul the way Susan does, because Susan knows Paul. She knew Paul before Mike knew Paul.
Yeah.
She knew him as, you know, the wonderful, caring husband and, you know, friendly neighbor and all of that. Mike came in. Mary Alice had already, you know, popped her clogs by that point. And Paul was the only one left that could help Mike figure it out, stole his baby and all of that sort of stuff. So I think Mike obviously is looking at Paul through those eyes, whereas Susan has a bit more of a general understanding to the well-roundedness of who Paul is as a person.
Why can't Mike somewhat see Susan's side, though? I mean, they did just go and take Zach to rehab together.
Yeah.
He did show a genuinely caring side in that episode.
Yeah, he did.
Come on, Mike.
But Mike's, you know, views are clouded by his, you know, past experiences with Paul.
And he doesn't have a lot of emotional intelligence.
Well, no, he doesn't.
So, back at home, Susan finds a really nicely laid out dinner table. Mike pops open the champagne and they make up.
They do make up, yeah.
Because he sees that, you know, she's been her kind, compassionate self, and that's what he loves her for.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan says, especially since it's been 6 months and we haven't had sex. And excitedly, she gets carried into the bedroom.
Isn't it 6 weeks?
Sorry, it is 6 weeks. My God, 6 months, could you imagine?
6 months. Well, I've gone longer.
Okay. Well, yeah. not with me, though.
No, not with you. But you don't need to say that. That could get edited out, please.
Well, you're the one that said it.
I said I've gone longer. You were the one that said not with me, though. And your mum listens to this podcast. So I don't need to that.
Anyway, he carries her excitedly into the bedroom. So we can assume what they're about to do.
Yeah, train goes in the tunnel. They're rocket fully takes making off. Up. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's that story.
That was it. We said it all. It was an interesting story. Overall, I don't think any of the stories in this episode are too bad. I do just think that one's the worst.
Yeah,
of them.
I'm not full of thoughts.
No.
So I'm going to move on to Gabby and Bree's story, which is very good.
Oh, you're doing that one next.
So Gabby is going out for coffee with the ladies, but Carlos forbids her to go out as Bree's going to be there. She tells him that he can't stop her and threatens to abstain from sex, but apparently Gabby always gives in first. She then has a phone call with Bree about this, and Bree agrees that she has caused a lot of pain, and so maybe they shouldn't see each other at Carlos's. But anyway, we have a clip.
So what do you say? No more poker? No more lunches? No more shopping? I'll miss it as much as you do. Oh, really? Doesn't sound like it. I think this is easy for you.
Easy? I want to come over there right now so you can drag me to the mall kicking and screaming, but we can't. I have to go. I have scones in the oven.
I love your scones.
Stop.
Goodbye, Gabby.
Oh, I wish I knew how to make scones.
I love your scones.
Yeah.
So it's so good. I get that Carlos is upset, obviously, for obvious reasons, and if he wants to cut Bree out of his life, that's fine, but bitch can't control his wife.
No, of course not, but as we've discussed previously, he can divorce her, which I would if my partner was doing this.
Really?
You agreed in the last episode.
I see.
Like, she held this massive secret. Like, we have to cut her out. It was horrible.
See, I don't know. Did I agree in the last episode?
Yeah, we said that there's a line, and when someone...
There is a line.
When someone knows someone that ran over your mum and held it from you for all these years, we were like, there's a line you have to draw in the
there
sand.
There is a line, but I guess to be fair, it really depends on the circumstances. But if you, for whatever reason, didn't want to be friends with one of my friends, take out the murdering of the mum secret thing, but just in general, if you didn't want to be friends with one of my friends, then I wouldn't stop being friends with that friend.
Hold on. If we're taking out the running over of the mum situation, why are we bothering to talk about it? It's a completely different situation. Obviously, then you can see your friends. Who's going to hold you back from that?
Well, I don't know. Like you said, there is a line. We need to figure out what is in that line and what is that last thing that's like, what's the last thing a person can do before it crosses the line?
Okay, well, I'm going to move on while you try and figure that out. So Gabby goes over to Lynette's to find Bree watering the plants because apparently she's taking care of the place while they're away. And we'll get to the reason why they're away later.
Mm.
And decides to ask her if she wants a coffee. Bree says that they shouldn't, but they then bond over how the only other person to talk to right now is Susan, and she just brings everything back to kidneys.
You always have at least two in the friendship group that are closer. And in this show, it's Gabby and Bree. Like, the blatant bitching about Susan behind her back is just hilarious.
It is. And you know what? I mean, I hate to say it, but in my friendship group, I think I'm the Susan. I can very much imagine my friends meeting up like, he's probably just going to bang on about Tomb Raider or fucking
I think
carpet, right?
I think everybody thinks they're the Susan in the friendship group. Like, I think, or at least most people do. I think I'm the Susan, although actually, I don't know.
You're not the Susan.
I do kind of feel like I would be one of them sat on that sofa.
Yeah, you would. You're not the Susan. You're more the... You're the Gabby. I mean, who are we kidding? Come on.
I'm the glue.
So Gabby and Bree are enjoying some coffee and a slice of pineapple upside down cake, and she tells Bree that the new ingredient is danger. Well, she doesn't say that exactly.
Yeah.
Apparently, sneaking around makes everything taste better. And this is where we're getting into that sort of the allegory of cheating and affairs and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. Which Gabby relates back to when she had an affair with John Rowland, which is kind of like Susan and the kidney thing, but with Gabby and John Rowland, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but Gabby doesn't constantly go back to it.
No, that's true. I just feel like it's come up a lot. She says that she wouldn't understand, but Bree says that she would, as she cheated on Orson with Carl Meyer. And, I mean, I didn't realise that this wasn't common knowledge yet.
I mean, Susan obviously knows. I'm surprised Gabby had no idea, but I guess during that whole storyline, she was dealing with pregnant Lynette and the lawsuit against Carlos. So she probably didn't really care about anything else that was going on.
Also, when things aren't mentioned or aren't said and it's not made a big deal of, but we move on to another season, I think we forget that there's a lot of stuff that happened in the previous one that we just assume everyone knows about by now.
Yeah.
Like, they off-camera told each other. But yeah, this is the first time she heard about it. And they sort of bond over it like naughty teenagers.
Yeah, and I think Gabby's kind of jealous.
I did love when she was like, you cheated on Rex? And she was like, no, what do you take me for?
I cheated on Orson.
I was like, I don't really see how it's much better. Rex was also a bastard.
That's what I wrote. I was like, Orson gets disrespect. And obviously Orson does kind of deserve disrespect. He's
Well, we disrespect him all the time. He's a manipulative bastard.
Yeah, but Rex was an asshole too.
Yeah. I mean, he may not have cheated on you the way that Rex did. Did he cheat on her?
No, Orson didn't cheat on her.
But Rex Orson did. Was manipulative. He was horrible.
Yeah.
He was abusive.
Yeah.
He was emotionally abusive. Let's not get into this.
But Rex was also like that. Let's not forget when Brie wanted to do her cookbook and Rex kind of made her throw it away and get back into the kitchen and cook, ironically.
Well.
But only for him.
She got the one up eventually there.
She did. She poisoned him with onions.
I didn't mean that. I meant she got a cookbook. This gives Gabby a great idea, and she asks Brie to go to this new spa with her.
Mm.
Which is funny, because isn't someone else in this episode sparring a little bit?
Lynette.
Yeah. Funny that. So, Carlos comes home to find a slice of pineapple upside-down cake on the counter for him, which he says is exactly like the kind that Brie would make, but she denies having seen Brie, as she knows that Carlos feels a certain way about her. And I was thinking, why on earth did you bring him a slice home?
I don't know why.
You're so stupid. You?
Like, I don't know, like, obviously... Oh, we'll get to it. You'll get to it.
She doesn't have a lot of brain cells sometimes, dear Gabby. He asks where it came from, and Gabby claims to have made it herself in what I can only describe as a word vomit moment.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as she said it, I think she regretted saying that. Much to Carlos's disbelief, who asks Gabby to make him one while he watches to prove it. But I would be like, but there's already a slice there. Are you crazy?
And, like, also... My argument would be, well, no, we don't have the ingredients. I've just used them.
I'm not making you another blood cake.
I know this is played off as a joke, but this kind of... Carlos in this scene kind of gives Orson season 5.
What, when he makes the brisket or whatever it was.
He makes Brie make the pot roast.
Pot roast, that was it.
Like in the middle of the night, and he's like forcing Brie to make it. It kind of gives that. But I do love pineapple upside down cake.
I think he's not expecting her to actually make it. He doesn't want to manipulate her into actually making him food. He just wants her to admit that she didn't make it,
yeah,
but then she doesn't, and she just gets deeper and deeper.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think he anticipated it going this deep, but it got deep, it got there.
So she says that she's getting the flour and purposely gets it onto her clothes so that she can make a little getaway. Well, first she tries a little seduction, but that does not work.
Oh, I got flour all over me.
So yeah, she goes to freshen up and she phones Gabby. So she keeps in a Bluetooth headpiece as Brie talks her through the instructions and they both sort of make the cake at the same time.
Mm.
We have a scene of Gabby walking around grabbing ingredients and explaining what she's doing as she follows Brie's instructions, claiming to be talking to her grandmother when asking what to do with her grandmother's recipe. Like, she's calling upon the spirits.
The pauses while she has to wait for Brie to tell her what the ingredients are.
Looking at
like,
the sky.
The size. And Carlos is sat there and Gabby's like... But first of all, I will need sugar. Brown. And then she walks... how much sugar?
A little later, both ladies bring their cakes out of the oven. As you can imagine, Brie's is lovely.
If you put me and Bea together side by side to cook the same meal, this is how it would turn out.
Oh.
Bea's would have the beautiful meal. And I would flip mine over and it'd just come out.
I mean, I cook a lot. That's yeah. Gabby's is a sloppy mess.
Yeah. It is. How is there such a dramatic difference? I blame Brie. What did she do? How did she misguide my girl?
There's a science. Bacon's a science. She probably didn't whisk it properly. She probably accidentally had the oven with the wrong fit. Who knows?
Bull, what did your girl do to misguide my girl?
So she leaves the cake to dry on the windowsill with a cloth over it so that Carlos can't actually see the cake yet, while Brie runs over to swap them, and she does a little, like, run past some girls like, move! Hot cake!
The disrespect to diabetes as well.
Why?
Because they were girls collecting money for charity.
Oh.
They were like, oh, we're collecting money for diabetes or something, and Brie just goes, out of the way! Hot cake! And, like, pushes past them. I'm surprised she didn't hear that.
I've watched it twice for these notes, and I did not pick up on the diabetes reference.
You did not pick up on the diabetes at all. And usually that's the first word you hear.
What? She said cake. So while waiting, Gabby tells Carlos that this isn't about cake. It's about trust, which is a great line, and calls him out for forcing her to bake for him to make a point. She then notices the new cake has been dropped off and shows it to Carlos, who looks very shocked at Gabby's supposed skill, and she does a walk off.
If only trust was so easy to make.
Oof.
Absolute icon. This is such a dynamite set of scenes. absolute genius.
Oh, the writers were having a great time.
They were. I bet it was so much fun to film as well. Like, so much fun.
The next day, Gabby is leaving with a suitcase and Carlos thinks that she's going to a funeral.
But she lied about a friend dying so she can see Brie.
That's so funny. That's so bad.
And have a spa weekend. I mean, we all think about it, don't we? We all think about it. We just don't want to risk the karma.
What, we all think about pretending that someone died?
Yeah.
Carlos thanks her for not seeing Bree and appreciates how hard it must be for her, and they hug, which I thought was really nice, but then kind of sad because then he picks up on this long red hair on Gabby's new coat.
Yeah. Oh, I hugged a clown.
He's like bloody, he's like a detective over here. He's got like Batman vision or something. He then inspects her suitcase to find all the bikinis.
Yeah, a lot of bikinis. Is your friend getting buried at sea?
So then they argue about her seeing Bree, etc., etc. And he says that ever since moving here and getting close with the women, she always puts them first over him, which she denies. But he tells her to prove it by choosing him over Bree. So he's asking her to make a choice. Yeah. But in all fairness, in the past, I wouldn't blame her every time she chose the women because I've never really liked Carlos.
No, and my mentality always is, don't force me to make a decision because the one forcing me will not be the one picked.
No, I'd be like...
I don't appreciate being forced into making a decision.
I don't blame him at all if he said, look, I need you to make a decision here because if you carry on seeing this woman, I can't make amends about that. I can't, like, I don't blame him at all.
He really annoys me in this scene. Carlos is so high and mighty about Gabby choosing the women first since moving to the lane. But when they first moved to the lane, Gabby didn't have anyone else. So of course she got tight with her friends.
Yeah, like, he was always away.
He was constantly putting work before marriage. Plus, in that Eddie flashback, Carlos told Gabby to start making friends on the lane. So now you can't suddenly expect her to drop the very people that you pushed her towards as soon as you're ready to have her back.
Yeah, as much as I'm on Carlos's side with most of this stuff, that one moment I was like, I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah.
The episode then ends as Gabby goes over to Bree's. She tells her that Carlos knows about the weekend and asks if she can stay with her. Bree says yes, and then Gabby walks in with both of the girls, implying that she chose Bree.
Yeah, she chose Bree, and then she drags the kids over to Bree's as well.
She said, can I stay here? She did not say, can we stay here?
Can we stay here?
Probably because she knew that it could be a no.
It wouldn't work. And last time Lynette had Bree look after her kids, they got hit.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Bree's mentality is clearly talk shit, get hit. So Juanita and Celia need to be careful. Well, not so much Celia because you don't talk at all, but Juanita needs to be careful because she can talk some shit.
But apparently they break a lot of stuff.
They do. They do break a lot of stuff. Lee wasn't very happy. Yeah.
So that was Gabby and Bree's episode for the story. Very fun.
It was fun. It is definitely up there as a favourite storyline of mine. I do regularly think about it.
Yeah. And now we're going to move on to Lynette's story, which I think is just as fun.
I think it's a great story for Lynette.
So Tom comes home excited, but told to be quiet because Lynette has just put Paige to sleep. Basically, he tells her that he's going to this big conference with lots of speakers, and she gets really excited about it, and so it wakes up the baby. And Tom confirms it's a no kids allowed deal, which is what gives her the excited yelp in the first place.
Yeah, and like Warren Buffett goes to these things, and Bill Gates, and Oprah.
Yeah, apparently Oprah, but she is a businesswoman, isn't she?
She is a businesswoman, yeah.
So Lynette and Tom are now at the conference looking businessy and dapper when they run into Bob and Lee. Bob tells Tom not to talk about politics and then introduces him to another businessman while Lynette and Lee go for a drink as, you know, the plus ones.
The plus ones.
Lynette then sees someone's agenda over their shoulder and introduces herself to the woman who she said that she was just sort of like perching over the shoulder of.
She's a frugal queen. What Lynette says is, that's a little trick I learned when I was too cheap to buy my own newspaper.
Yeah.
And that is a frugal queen. Like,
she's
we
just
love
peering
it.
Over this woman's shoulder, looking at her agenda.
Yeah.
Because she can't be bothered to buy a pamphlet. I love that. The lady then lets Lynette know that as a plus one, she's not going to be able to see the guy's seminar that she wants to. Apparently, all of the plus ones aren't allowed to go to any of the seminars and stuff. The plus ones have their own little side thing. And by plus ones, aside from Lee, It's the wives, it's the women.
It's the wives and husbands and partners. I guess. Like the partners. But like, I hate this.
I mean, she says to her, well, Lynette asks why she and any plus one can't go to these seminars. And she said, some of us worked hard to make our way up the corporate ladder, and some of us just married someone who did before doing a bitchy walk off. And she did eat, I will give her that. But also, Lynette is on the corporate ladder right now. She is just on maternity leave.
In my opinion, that woman didn't eat because she and Meg Butler, who's the name of the woman, because she will come up later anyway, her and Lynette and Meg were talking about Chris Kavanaugh, who's the keynote speaker, and the book that he's just released. And Lynette was talking to her and saying, I thought it was the best business book of the year. Like, aren't you so excited? Lynette just showed that she is interested in business.
Yeah.
But she read that book. And then Meg's still like, well, some of us just married into this. Bitch, I'm interested. Bitch, I'm in this industry, you thought you ate with that statement and then you'll walk off. You didn't eat and you just walked out the line, girl. So
I'll be honest,
get back to the back if you want a drink.
I did agree with what she said. I think it's very snotty and I don't want to say classist, that's completely the wrong word, but you know where I'm going with this. Yeah. Maybe elitist or something like that. But I still think she ate because she just said it and she walked off and then they couldn't even get a word in because she's so shocked.
Yeah. I get that they don't have the room to have everyone and their plus one in a seminar. If everyone brings a plus one, obviously you've doubled the amount. I get that. And let's face it, not every plus one is going to be interested. From the sounds of it, it sounds like Lynette is really the only one that's actually very interested. But it should be open for plus ones to attend on a registration basis, in my opinion. So when you get there,
Lynette
could then register for the ones that she wants to attend, whether that's all of them or whether she doesn't. And it could be on a first-come, first-served basis. So as soon as those extra positions are filled up with plus ones, you can't attend anymore.
I think that's a really nice middle ground, actually. Because in a way, I was like, well, why should the plus ones go? This is for the business people, and the plus ones aren't all business people. And if they were, they would have been invited. So that does make sense, especially considering that Lynette is a businesswoman right now.
Yeah.
She's got a really cool high-up job in Carlos's company. And
well, no, she doesn't.
Why not?
Because she doesn't have a job.
Well, she's on maternity leave.
No, she's not. Tom took her job.
What, just took it completely? She was on maternity leave.
No, that ended. Tom stayed in her job. She stayed as a stay-at-home mum again.
But wait, he doesn't work with Carlos
No,
anymore.
He quit with Carlos now.
Wait, when did she decide not to go back to work? When was
last
that?
Season?
Oh my god.
This season, maybe. So yeah, Lynette's a stay-at-home mum. She doesn't have a job.
Ah, shit.
Oh no, she does have a job. Sorry, she's an interior designer with Renee.
Oh yeah. What the hell is going on in my head?
I've got no idea. She's interior designer with Renee. But
it's been 3 weeks.
It has.
Leave me be.
But yeah, no, I think that is a happy middle ground. I'm sorry, but as sad as it makes me sound, I love a conference. I'd be feeling the same way if I was Lynette.
Lynette is having a bad time in one of the, let's just call them the wife classes, where they're putting some flowers and sticks together. I didn't even know what they were doing, some sort of flower arrangement thing.
They start with a scavenger hunt, so they had to get in pairs, which just sounds like hell.
Oh, I thought that sounded great. I was like, can I do the scavenger hunt and then go to the conference?
I want to be intellectually stimulated. I don't want to be running around a hotel or wherever they are looking for things.
I want to do both.
And then they do flower arranging, yoga, fashion show, and dancing. Like, yeah.
Okay, this is disgusting behavior. I get that the plus ones have this great weekend as well, but I don't get why it's not just all rest and relaxation themed. Why are we doing all of these shitty things as well?
I don't know. It's just to assume all plus ones wouldn't understand business or wouldn't be interested in this world.
I find the activities they've chosen a bit sexist because it's very stereotypically feminine focused.
Yes, it is stereotypically feminine or gay because Lee seems to love it.
In all fairness, and that's the only one that's not having a good time.
No, she is, but she's also like, they're all women bar Lee.
Yeah. So she tells Lee that she wanted to see the interesting seminars and begins asking the other women in the room if they're also pissed off as much as she is to be denied access and stuffed in a room like second class citizens. To try and defuse the situation, the woman who's running the whole thing brings out the cocktails early to distract them all. And well, Lynette kind of gives up.
Lynette does, I think, take it a step too far.
With the burqa comment.
With the burqa comment. This, it may be small and red, but this lanyard is no better than a burqa. No, girl.
Yeah, that was a very of its time comment. That has aged poorly.
That really has.
This was a time when we viewed any sort of religious practice that isn't followed in a more Western setting as oppressive. And it's like, loads of women choose to wear burqas.
That's the thing. Like, the thing is, obviously, burqas, the mentality from the Western culture was that it was a forced practice put upon the women. And for some women, it was. For other women, they choose to wear a burqa. So the point of it really now is to be left to personal choice. You can't force a woman to cover herself up completely. Should she want to, then it is her choice and she can.
Yeah.
But back in the time when this episode aired, it was kind of not really thought about like that.
Yeah, it's a complicated issue, isn't it? The sort of the mix between what's forced in religion, but also the people that want to follow that religion that way.
Yeah.
And I don't think this writer handled that very well.
No.
They just used it as a throwaway comment about second-class citizens or whatever.
Yeah, and it's not really something that we can talk on too much about as two people that aren't really religious.
No.
So...
Not really, no. So Lynette makes her way to the seminar that she was excited for, and Tom asks what she's doing here. He says that he's asked about having her attend the seminar as well, but apparently they have other activities planned for the spouses. Mm.
there's something that comes up in this scene which kind of makes me question whether Lynette's being overdramatic or not. And that's because Tom says the keynote speech isn't for spouses. So are there other speeches for spouses then? Because you're not going to attend just this keynote speech. There will be tons of different speeches. They're all going on at different times that you should be able to pick and choose to go to. And then there is the main one, which would have been the keynote speech.
That's a very good point. I don't think so, though.
So if the other speeches are available for spouses and it is just the big keynote speech, then I do think Lynette is being a bit overdramatic, considering it's only one speech that she can't attend. But I do very much imagine that it's all of them.
Yeah, I think it was just some poor wordplay from Tom there, to be quite honest. So Lynette states that she isn't a child before hiding behind a sign to avoid being spotted by that woman earlier.
Yeah.
The woman then, who organises all the activities, then does actually catch Lynette and leads her out, taking her to the spa.
Mm.
Lynette then accuses her of like just getting them all drunk so they don't fight back.
Well,
but it's like, Lynette, you're the only one. You're the only one. She's trying to start a revolution, but no one cares.
Yeah, she is, really. It's like Les Mis for Lynette right now, but none of the others are ready for it.
Lee is very much enjoying his spa day in this next scene when Lynette turns around to see the rude woman from earlier on the phone saying that she's going to have a soak before the speech. So Lynette decides to take this opportunity to steal the woman's pass, hide her clothes, and sneak into the seminar as her. And that's just such a Lynette thing to do, isn't it?
Bad. Lynette is a bad girl.
Lynette.
It's very bad.
She wants what she wants.
She really
does. And she will do anything to. I mean, at least she's not ruining lives right now.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, Lynette, what are you doing?
But do you not think that because it's a big business seminar, and it sounds like reasonably the same people tend to go each year, which is usually the case with some of these conferences, that people will know who Meg Butler is. And if they see you walking around with a Meg Butler lanyard, it's going to raise some eyebrows.
And from the way that she's been talking, I think we can assume that she's been in the game for long enough to know what she's doing. The way that she's bossing people around on the phone. She's like, you tell him that if he doesn't do this or whatever.
Yeah, she's been in the game a while.
I think people are going to know who she is.
Yeah.
So she needs to wear the lanyard so that the name part is facing inward that no one can see it. And then when they're like, who are you? And she can just be like, oh, Lynette Scavo. I work at... Oh, shit.
Oh, there's a Tom Scavo here as well. Is that a relation?
Brother.
Oh.
Sorry, just came out.
Oops.
So a guy sees her name tag and they have a seat up front for her, apparently. So Lynette sits down in this random woman's seat. The man who saw her take the seat then gets on the stage and introduces the president of the company, which is apparently this Meg woman who Lynette has stolen the pass from.
Yeah, well, president of a company.
Yeah, president of a company.
Amtech or Amtrek or something like that. I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
It's still going horribly.
Lynette then gets up on that stage and nobody really seems that surprised to see someone who isn't Meg Butler, which just kind of contradicts everything that we've just said we believe about Meg Butler, which is that she seems like she's been in the game for a while and she's attended this seminar a few times.
I didn't notice that because if that's true, that also contradicts what Lynette says when she gets on the stage and she looks out into the crowd and goes, so as any of you know, I'm not Meg.
Exactly.
It's as if she can see that they know that she's not this person.
From the shots of the people in the audience, none of them really seem that puzzled as to why they've introduced Meg Butler and someone else has gone on stage, except Tom, who obviously knows that's not Meg Butler, that is his wife.
Yeah. She embarrasses herself a little bit before the woman comes into the room in her spa gown and calls Lynette, and I quote, the bitch who stole her clothes in front of everybody.
In front of everyone.
Leading to Lynette just introducing the guy that she loves who's doing the seminar and doing a runoff.
To be fair, Lynette deserved that for that terrible joke that she made when she got up there. And she was like, for those of you who know Meg, you'll know I'm not Meg. Nutmeg.
That's funny. It's funny. You can laugh.
It wasn't funny. It's terrible.
I don't know what came up first between this episode and season one of Miranda. But there's an episode in Miranda where she goes on holiday and she accidentally gets roped into a business seminar. And so then she gets brought onto the stage and has to pretend to be a businesswoman before sneaking out of a window. I was like, wait, what? Which one stole from the other?
I fucking love Miranda.
Yeah.
Like, I do feel very bad for Tom right now because everyone is going to know who this basket case is soon enough.
Oh.
And this is his first time at that conference. Like, he will be humiliated every time he attends that conference now going forward. It will be known that his wife was the one that stole Meg Butler's clothes.
True.
And claimed to be her.
Run away. Start a new business in China. Build yourself up again. Just don't come back here.
And it will be very Drag Race. So they'll stop all of the plus ones from having too much to drink now. Because they'll blame it on the booze. So the plus ones will probably get one, maybe two drinks.
And then if she ever comes back, she'll be hated.
She'll be hated by the plus ones for the fact that she is the woman that stopped the drinks. Like Jujubee.
Yeah. Yeah.
She'll be the Jujubee of this conference.
So they're now back at home and Renee asks how the conference was. Lynette said it was okay, and then Tom makes a comment about how they became the laughing stock of the whole event and tells Renee that Lynette embarrassed him and herself in front of the whole conference.
Renee's great. She literally, she is in this episode for the space of like a minute and she steals it.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, are you having an argument? Well, I'll just be here. It's like I'm not even here.
Yeah, they say yes and any person will be like, I better go. But she was like, you right now, I'm here. Yeah, and she just sits there.
She just sits there and watches.
I mean, luckily for her, Tom's like, well, you've embarrassed me, so I don't mind embarrassing you in front of Renee. You know what? So Renee's getting the tea.
Yeah.
He then says that after years of supporting and taking a back seat for Lynette, she couldn't do the same for him, leaving Lynette speechless as he does a walk-off. She then tries to tell Renee how awful it was to be a second-class citizen at this conference. She loves that. That is such a buzzword for her.
Yeah.
And Renee tells her that she's just seen as the wife in Tom's world, and she has to get used to it. Renee tells her from experience that she can be a wife or she can be a first wife, which...
As in, like, the first lady?
Yeah, that kind of thing, right? I mean, it's not fair, is it? I think Lynette is seeing it as unfair. The system is broken. We have to repair the system or start a new one. And Renee is seeing it as, well, how do I play into the system to get my way?
It's just, this entire scene really made me angry.
Is it because of Tom's ludicrousy?
Because of Tom's, like, it took a back seat to his career. Like, that's... Tom and Felicia need to start a club because he's fucking insane.
He's delusional.
Absolutely delusional.
I don't know what... I can't... Where do we begin?
When has
Tom ever just comfortably taken a backseat for Lynette?
Right, like how about when Lynette first got pregnant after she didn't want a child and then she gave up her career to be a stay-at-home mum? Or when Tom decided that he wanted to run a pizza place and she left her job to help him run his dream? Or when Lynette fell pregnant again and Tom had a conversation with Carlos behind Lynette's back about how she won't want to return to her job at his company and she will want to stay at home with the baby despite knowing that Lynette doesn't enjoy doing that?
Yeah, very supportive about her business and her career aspirations indeed.
Like, she has continuously changed her life to suit him, like, continuously, whilst Tom has constantly been the one to cause dramas and problems in his never-ending quest to find a brand new dream. Like, I'm fuming. It really made me angry.
But babe, his dream is to not be embarrassed at a conference. It's his season 7 dream.
Oh my god. Like, just the problem here isn't that Lynette is Tom's wife. It's the fact that she was treated like an idiot. Like, she wouldn't get the nuances of business. And she clearly can't handle being surrounded by all these strong, intelligent, mostly male business people. When in actual fact, she's proved to a whole audience that actually she knew what she was talking about when she got up there and introduced Chris Kavanagh. She got up there and she did introduce him. She did introduce him well. And she spoke about his book. And she proved right there to that audience that she actually knew what she was fucking talking about, even if she was a bit loopy.
But yeah, still a very funny story, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it was hilarious.
Had a good time. And now let's wrap it up and talk about the final story, Felicia. Now I have to say, the word unhinged gets thrown around a lot, but Felicia Tillman of Desperate Housewives fame, truly is unhinged.
Yeah, she really is unhinged. Like, when you flip through the dictionary and you get to the word unhinged, there should be a photo of Felicia.
We've talked about people being nuts in this show before, but Felicia has just topped them all, and this episode is no exception.
Because there's fun nuts.
So Felicia goes over to Karen's house to offer something of Martha Huber's, saying that she was always so fond of Karen. She then thanks her for keeping Felicia's secret for so many years, even if it isn't a secret now, and tells her that she still keeps Karen's secret about her role that night, and she'll never tell anyone. And this is brand new information, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Like, it is brand new information. It was a gag. There's a secret.
Karen clearly doesn't want anyone hearing about this as she closes the door and tells Felicia she'll be sure to see her around. When back inside, Roy asks if she's okay because she looks like she's seen a ghost, and Karen deflects by asking for a drink. And I didn't write it down, so I didn't say it, but also it was revealed that Felicia is now her neighbour.
Oh, yeah, and Karen isn't interested in renewing this friendship with Felicia. Felicia's like, you should stop by sometime, and Karen's like, oh, I'll do that.
Now, one of the things that I think people really loved about season one, and a lot of people think that season one is the best season, was because they had this secret and they had a big mystery and they had a really good way of getting little bits of bite-sized information until you get the overall story. This episode gives us that and then ruins it completely right now when we get a flashback of Karen looking for Ida Greenberg's cat when Felicia runs through the yard with her bleeding hand from where she's cut her fingers off.
Yeah.
She offers to call an ambulance, but Felicia says, you know Paul killed Martha, right? Which she agrees to. And then Karen asks if she's just literally murdered Paul. She says that she didn't, but she's making sure that he won't get away with murdering her. Mm. And Karen goes back to looking for the cat, and they have this unspoken promise to pretend that she never saw a thing.
Yeah. And, like, I personally think this flashback is kind of cool. Like, yeah, I know a lot of people don't like this story beat. I know B doesn't. B hates it when TV shows and films do something like this. Like not so much films.
What do you mean?
When TV shows will add in a story beat from a historical storyline to help keep things moving.
Oh, I get what you mean. I really don't mind this. I just don't like that they revealed it straight away. Because when she said the secret that you kept that I'll never tell, I was like, oh, this is intriguing. And we've still got 4 episodes left of the season. Mm. But then they just tell you right away. I was like, yeah. Come on, guys.
My problem with this scene was that they used new Karen at a time when old Karen was around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, do you get what I mean?
I mean, there was a different haircut, wasn't it?
It was a different Karen. Like, it was the actress was exactly
Karen.
The same.
I was thinking of Felicia. No. Sorry.
The actress was obviously exactly the same, don't get me wrong. But the personality of Karen was completely different in the earlier seasons. Like, in the earlier seasons, the original Karen was a cranky mess of a woman. Mm-hmm. And it was only in the later seasons that she really seems to develop as a character and a person. And she seems to, you know, sort herself out a little bit.
Yeah.
But in the flashback, because obviously the actress is now new Karen, they don't make her look like old Karen from like back in season one. She just looks like new Karen.
Yeah.
That was my problem. If you're going to do a flashback, you need to make sure the people in the flashback look like how they looked.
Yeah, you need a continuity.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I get what you mean, actually. I didn't even spot that because I was too busy looking at how different Felicia looked.
We should have, it was a disappointment because we should have got messy old Karen and not fabulous old lady Karen.
Yeah, I get you. So later, Karen and Felicia are catching up with a coffee, and she asks Felicia how she got out of prison so soon, and she tells her it was because of the humanitarian release. Karen apologizes, saying that she didn't know about her even having a daughter, and she says that her daughter was Beth Young, which makes Karen look very confused, / concerned.
And Karen's too old to be taking gags like that.
Yeah.
Her poor heart.
So we cut to a moment later, and Felicia is telling Karen all about how Paul manipulated Beth into falling in love with him before kicking her out and saying that she didn't deserve to live or something.
You're such a fucking liar, Camille.
Yeah, leading to Beth killing herself. Unfortunately, Karen seems to believe Felicia's very biased side of the story, as well as total lie.
Yeah, she has the delusion. She's so delusional, and then she has the audacity to look her friend in the eyes and be like, Paul tricked Beth into loving him, and then he broke her heart and told her that no one would ever love her.
Yeah, it's bananas. It's crazy.
Absolutely fucking wild.
She asks how she can live on the same street as a monster like Paul, and Felicia says it so that she can watch him and make sure that he doesn't destroy anyone else. Karen offers her own help and tells Felicia to call her if she needs anything. And Felicia says, I'm so lucky to have a friend like you.
She also says, please don't tell anybody else. I'd hate for people's opinions of Beth to have changed or be rich. And I'm like, you don't want people to know because it's all lies.
This line was great. She was like, Beth wouldn't want anyone to know that everyone knew that she was such a fool or something.
Yeah, right.
It was very sassy.
So fucking shitty. You just don't want it getting out because it's lies. All lies.
I'm very confused about this, though, because the thing is, the show wants us to believe that Felicia is a manipulative psychopath and that she has this gift of the gab and that she can, like, almost fool anyone.
She's very charismatic.
Or at least at the moment, because sometimes I think they want us to believe that she's so delusional and crazy that no one would ever believe her. I just don't get why Karen is falling for this. I think it's because Karen has a bias.
Karen has a bias. Paul. Karen has always thought that Paul killed Martha.
Yeah.
And so that, in Karen's mind, automatically makes her believe Felicia over Paul, because Felicia is just a grieving sister that's trying to, and is still trying, to make amends for the death of her sister.
There's something very human about that, though, isn't there? Mm. Like, she's clearly lying. She's clearly not to be trusted, but you're also a bit like, yeah, but he's such a bad guy. Who am I to really disbelieve?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Like,
nuts. Absolutely. A bonkers story. It's so crazy. And that's the end of Felicia's story for the episode.
Yeah. 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 It was an absolutely crazy story. If I was Karen, I don't know how much to be, if I was Karen, if my friend chopped off their fingers, I don't know after that how much I believe them.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd have such a heavy bias on like one side after that information.
I
also, I didn't know you had a daughter. You've just told me you had a daughter. I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, but so. She wasn't Felicia. She wasn't really Felicia's friend, was she? She was Martha's friend.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. They're kind of new friends.
She only became Felicia's friend because Felicia moved to the lane to try and find out about Martha, but it's not like she's got a hardcore friendship with Felicia.
That's very true. And, you know, part of me really wants her to avenge Martha because I've really loved Martha.
I want her to avenge... Martha deserves to have that thing. Martha was a cow. She was a horrid woman.
Yeah, in real life, I'd probably be more on Paul's side, but, like, seriously, no, I loved Martha.
I still wouldn't be on Paul's side. I don't care what Martha did. It's not your job to take someone else's life into your own hands. Like, I don't care. She should not have blackmailed your wife. She was blackmailing your wife, but she had no... Even in the words of Martha at the time, she had no idea that she was going to put a gun to her head.
That's true. But there's something so sexy about that kind of vengeance, isn't there? Like an eye for an eye.
Of course there is.
But then Felicia's doing an eye for an eye. It's a cycle.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our last part of the podcast. I mean, thank God we need to wrap this up, right? Where Joel is going to give us the gayest and the straightest moments. Yeah. So what do you have for the gayest moment of this episode?
My award for gayest moment. I mean, it's got to go to Bri and Gabby, right?
For their lesbian
love affair.
Yeah. They even sort of make a little joke about it.
Yeah, they do.
There was a moment where she was like, you know what we should do? And Bri's like, oh, I don't think we should do that.
Yeah, I know. And it's just, it's full of innuendo. And Gabby was just like, oh, you know, I like my coffee with cream. And then Bri's like, I know how you like it.
Yeah, it was very much the same as Robin with the caramel or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was very much given that. But at least with that, we actually got a lesbian outcome from that, even if.
No spoilers.
I know. No spoilers, but you know, I'm just saying.
So what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment. I'm giving it to Mike.
Okay.
Even I'm pretty sure I gave it to Mike last time as well, didn't I? But I'm giving it to Mike because of the thinking that anal is kinky.
Right.
And the whole you can't talk to people without my prior consent.
Yeah,
this is the 1930s and you're a woman.
Yeah, or with Gabby, the 19
whatever year it is,
when men tell their women who they can and can't talk to.
Tell their women.
I don't
you
remember.
Tell that. Your woman.
I don't remember the exact line.
But yeah, so it just I don't know. I don't really think there was too much straight in this episode, really.
No, that was a good choice. I mean, we don't normally have our awards so cut and dry, but that was very it.
Yeah, it was. It was very it. And now we move on to Bri's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
So my award for...
best parent of the episode.
It goes to Felicia for taking such good care of the urn.
She hasn't done anything. Oh, at the very, very end, Karen put two candles next to it.
Yeah, well, she's like talking to the urn. She's looking after the urn. In this episode, you know, she's displaying the urn so nicely on the mantelpiece when Karen's over. And I was like, that's such good care.
And you know what? It makes a very valid point that even after you've lost a child, you never stop being a parent.
Yeah, even if when they're alive, she was the worst parent.
But she was the worst parent.
What can I say? Wonderful care right there. And also, who else was I going to give it to? Let's be honest.
True, true. And so who do you have for the worst parent of the episode?
So my award for...
worst parent of the episode.
This one was really hard to give out. And even though I don't fully think this is a bad parent moment or anything, there was no one else to give it to. So I gave it to Gabby for just possibly ending this marriage and choosing Bri.
Yeah, I mean, just...
taking the kids out of their home, all of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the ending of a marriage does not immediately make you a bad parent, no, but...
No, it doesn't. But if you have to have a bad parent and no one on the lane's doing much, it goes to you.
No, but what I'm saying is if you are potentially running the risk of ending a marriage over something very trivial, then I guess that does sort of lean into the bad parent thing. Now, where we get into the sort of blurred lines of it is what constitutes as trivial, really? Because that is a very movable line for people.
We are not talking about the line again, okay? We already said that someone running someone over and hiding it is going over the line.
I'm just saying.
No more line. We're not talking about the line.
Oh my God, you're being so overdramatic.
So that was season 7, episode 19, The Lies Ill Concealed. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us?
I don't remember. Okay. You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review, and we are also on TikTok at Boyfriends Review, I think.
I think the only thing that it's different is the last one, Reddit.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. See, yeah, I said I don't remember and I completely forgot Reddit. And you can find us paling off our unsolicited opinions on various topics on Reddit as well.
Boyfriends Review Pod?
Boyfriends Review Pod.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. So Instagram and TikTok are the same. And then that one has the pod at the end. We also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com. And our friend Louis does all of the artwork. Thank you again, Louis. You can find him on Instagram at DocRedMonkDesign. There is a link to his Etsy page and he does commissions.
Yes.
Join us next time when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 7, Episode 20, I'll Swallow Poison on Sunday. I can assume it's from Sunday in the Park with George.
But I'm going to assume, but just wait until next week when we're both proven wrong, I bet.
Yep, 100%.
It's from Follies.
Yeah. So thanks for listening. Thank you for welcoming us back. And what a grand return.
Yeah.
Yeah. See you then, guys.
See you then, guys.
Bye.